Want to get smarter about investing? Then tune into the Capital Ideas podcast from Capital Group, home of American Funds Distributors, Inc., one of the world's leading asset managers. Learn from portfolio managers with decades of experience by listening to the Capital Ideas podcast today.
We talk at you all the time. Now we want to talk with you. Janet and I are partnering, and we are so excited. We will be offering a 3-session series, Talk with Boys Like a Pro, about anything and everything.
3 sessions, 3 weeks in a row. Jen, I'm so excited about this because not only do we get to see each other again in a week, but we get to talk directly with our listeners, and we'll be bringing great information, but also there will be time for discussion, time for questions, and that is truly where the gold is.
We will troubleshoot in real life all those questions that pop into your head when you hear us do podcasts and make suggestions. This is your chance to ask, to clarify, to really drill down into how you can use these communication techniques and shift your strategies in your home, in your family, with your child.
Go to boysalive.com/boys. And all the info is there. Get registered. This is going to be a whole lot of fun. Again, that's Talk with Boys Like a Pro, about anything and everything. We will be live in May. All the details are at boysalive.com/boys. And get registered. Don't delay. This is going to be so much fun, and it's going to give you peace of mind, new information, new insights. We hope you'll join us.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If boys are struggling, they are often struggling in silence. Join us to hear from Jonathan Reed, who is talking directly with boys, and he'll share with us what he is hearing. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-hosts, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net, and I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. As always, we so appreciate you, our listeners, and thanks too for supporting our sponsors. On this podcast, we talk often with the experts, those doing research, writing the books. Today's guest, though, is part of Next Gen Men, creating communities with boys. That means boys have a safe space to share their thoughts, feelings, and perspectives on things like consent and what it's really like to be growing up in these times, perspectives that we, the adults, may be missing. Jonathan Reed was a guest on our podcast way back in 2019 and once more since then. So it's great to have you back for the third time, Jonathan. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
So good to have you chiming in from Canada. We love that. Growing up, you were told that the way you're being a boy is not okay. That was many, many years ago, some years ago. Do you think that boys are getting a different message now?
Oh, wow. That's a really interesting question to start with. So my experience with growing up, I guess, was I was really small for my age. I had long blonde hair. You know, when I started high school, I weighed 84 pounds. I was, I didn't fit. I just inherently didn't fit into that system, that sort of stereotypical narrative of, you know, being tough, being strong, and that kind of thing. And so I faced a lot of homophobic and gender-based violence for that. And Yeah, I mean, I was talking with boys last week, this grade 6 to grade 8 boys, and we were brainstorming that, again, that's this like sort of stereotypical narrative. And they were like, it's not about pink and blue, you know, we can wear pink if we want to. And in fact, actually, that day was Pink Shirt Day, which is the holiday in Canada about anti-bullying, and a number of them were wearing pink. So I think what comes to mind for me is that it's kind of gone under the radar. Like, it's not as upfront as like, oh, you have to have short hair or you can't wear pink, which is sometimes what we first think of when we think of gender stereotypes. And it's become a bit more subtle and a bit more about, for sure, like the boys don't cry narrative is still super present, and the pressure to get girls or the pressure to be dating and in relationships, those things are still super present, and they're a little bit harder to put your finger on than just, you know, that color of clothing is not okay.
It's almost more confusing for boys and for the parents and teachers trying to help them navigate it. You know, when it's out there in your face, you know, this is what you're dealing with. When it's a little more subtle, it's, do you think this plays into some of the increased anxiety that kids are experiencing? And the reason why I'm asking that is, you know, when you are not sure what to expect, or is this a safe place for me? You're kind of constantly on guard and watching, because if you miss something, that could be it. You know, that could be the, I have just socially outcast myself, is what you think as a kid.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it goes without saying that like the pressures and expectations that we face have an impact on our mental well-being, and especially the trust and the closeness that we have with our peers is like a huge factor in that. So yeah, I think that's kind of, yeah, that's got to be present in how kids are experiencing things like anxiety. Another example that I kind of think of sometimes when I think about how the gendered narrative has shifted is Iron Man, because, well, so Iron Man's a superhero, and the like traditional narrative of superhero is like protector, invulnerable, you know, super strong, and kind of it like plays in like the it plays into that stereotype of being a man. And Iron Man at some point in the first sort of wave of the Avengers franchise was sort of displayed struggling with post-traumatic stress symptoms. Like, he was having flashbacks and he was having a really hard time sort of coping with the amount of, a little bit of the amount of pressure, but also just like the scary stuff that he had experienced while defending New York City. And so to me, it becomes that much harder to put your finger on exactly what message is this sending, because it overlaps with that invulnerability, but it also overlaps with like self-sacrifice. It overlaps with like mental struggle. Who does he tell? How does he tell them? And it just becomes, it's like more complicated than just the superhero narrative needs to change. It's changing, but is it changing in all the ways that we need it to?
Sure, because now we're acknowledging, okay, yeah, you know what? If you are saving New York City, you're seeing some shit, and that's good. You're going to have some scenes in your head replaying. Okay, so we'll acknowledge that, but you still need to save everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's complex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and where's the safety net for you? You know,
right.
Where's the safety net for Iron Man? What does he do? You know, it's not like he's, I mean, do they show him meditating and doing yoga? Maybe not. So it's like, here's the complexity. Where do you go with it?
Right.
No easy answers here at all.
I have felt as a parent that watching my kids, you know, navigate school and puberty, we are in this time of transition. You know, you're alluding to that, Jonathan. Our understanding of masculinity, frankly, our understanding of so many things within culture, it's shifting, and there's progress and there's pushback, and we're in this time of transition and we haven't figured out where we're landing yet. And I think it's difficult for all of us trying to live in that transitory time, because the old rules don't entirely apply and we haven't figured out what the new ones are.
Yeah, and to me, that's something that's really valuable about working with and really listening to the voices of young people, because as adults, we're kind of inherently using really outdated tools. So we might talk about consent later in this conversation, but like, mm-hmm. for example, I didn't really get any consent education growing up, really. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that like the idea that I might be, you know, an expert that is like teaching young people on things like consent or things positive masculinity or like a redefinition or an expansion of the stereotype, when I never saw that firsthand, they are. And yeah. so they're, yeah, I think they're, they've kind of be, we've got to look towards them as the leaders in this conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, add, you know, I don't know, 40 more years to your age, Jonathan, or maybe 30, like consent wasn't even a word that was used when I was growing up. So there is that place where we can stand here as the quote unquote experts on all things masculinity and boys. Jen and I are women. You know, we can mm-hmm. we can have the conversations and read the books and think about the things, but it really is. And that's why I love talking to you, because you are working with the boys. When you go into these groups, if you were to just maybe sit and listen, what would they be talking about?
Yeah, there's a good chance they're going to be talking about TikTok. I would say like school stress and school pressure is still like super, super present in young mm-hmm. people's lives. And it kind of bums me out that that's the case, given what we've gone through in the pandemic, that mm-hmm. we didn't effectively take stock of like, where are we going with this set of expectations and school performance? And I think there's some educators doing that. There's some schools doing that, but by and large, like the stress related to academics just still looms really large in the lives of young people. I had a 15-year-old text me last night saying I failed a math test. And, you know, and I'm kind of digressing here, but I read some quote that was like, you know, your marks, like, I can't remember what the quote was, but basically it was something about like, the mark is not a reflection of your worth. It's a reflection of where you're at and where you can grow. And I was like, every student, every teacher really needs to absorb that lesson. So yeah, this guy is just like, I failed. And I said, what subject was it? Or like what type of math? And he said, radicals. I'm not even sure what radicals are in mathematics. I don't know what that is. So I texted him back, you're radical.
You know, I want to comment here for a minute, because you hear this all the time in your coaching, Janet, and I hear it from other parents. Parents think boys don't care about school. You are telling us boys are affected deeply by school pressure. So there's a disconnect there between what a lot of parents think and boys experience. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. My first thought is that, you know, we humans tend to put up these, well, I don't care. Mm-hmm. It's easier than saying I'm hurt, or it's easier than saying I'm struggling. What's your take on that?
Yeah. I think it's partly the, like some of the young people that I work with tend to be like a little sort of non-stereotypical, just, and that's how they came to be connected with next gen men. So that's probably part of it. And the expectation that boys are checked out, or boys are the class clown, or, you know, boys need medication if they're going to get anything done, and so on, like that goes back decades. And I would avoid generalizing all boys. Like there's boys that are really disinterested in school, and there are boys that are, you know, focused heavily on school. And yeah. then there's boys that kind of hide the level to which they're impacted by how the teacher views them and perceives their work and their worth. And I was going to say, what came to mind for me, because I don't know, I never try to like come up with like a, oh, this is the, you know, the official answer. So what actually just came into my mind when you shared that, Jen, is maybe there's some boys that they don't do well in school, but they are super athletic, and they get that opportunity to be validated, whether it's that by their way. Peers, by coaches, or probably by their school community overall, mm-hmm. Because of their performance elsewhere. And it actually kind of just made me think of boys who, you know, they're like middle of the packs, like with academics, like they're not super inclined for athletics. And it just sort of made me think of, if they're not fitting into some level of stereotypical expectations, wherever it might be, how do they get affirmation that they are good enough for who they are? So that's what came to mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if that answers the question, but that's what came to mind for me.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it opens up that line of thought. as you're talking, I wonder what you would say to parents about how can we alleviate some of this school stress. If this is taught most in the minds of boys, some boys, many boys, what can parents and other adults do to help alleviate that? And I think part of it is, you know, we tend to telescope like, oh, he's in ninth grade. This is what I hear from parents. He's in ninth grade and he's failing that math test and he's in advanced placement. And we're already projecting into his adult life. He's going to be a failure. Mm-hmm. But we know from this perspective, like, do you remember failing a math test in high school? Maybe you never did, but, you know, do we remember that? Is that as important now in our adult lives as it is looming for our kids?
Yeah. I mean, as parents, we can totally project our own anxieties and then try to like manifest that into high expectations. And we end up with young people who feel, you know, judged or like they've let us down when things go wrong. And a couple of things come to mind for me. One is letting go of expectations. A really great, again, I'm always quoting quotes that I can't remember exactly how it went or who came from, but a really, another quote that was really impactful for me was someone pointed out, you know, if you never really get the handle on spelling, or if you never really like land that, like that math concept, you're going to still be okay. You will find a place in your life where that like, you know, that like autocorrect will do it for you, or you'll find some place where mathematics aren't the center of what you need to be able to do to perform, and you'll be okay.
We just admitted that we are three adults who are all adulting, living our lives in professional. We manage our personal lives and none of us know what a radical is.
Right. Huh. Yeah. So we should, first of all, we should just tell that 15-year-old it's going to be okay.
Right?
And what the quote pointed out was, so if you, yeah, if you don't learn that level, that specific topic in mathematics, that's going to be fine. But what if what you do learn in school is that you aren't good enough, you know, or that you, are going to be judged if you fall short of someone's expectations, or that you can't take risks. Like all those kinds of lessons, they will impact you and where you end up in the relationships in the workplace, wherever it might be. So I think that's about just sort of rethinking what exactly are we teaching young people in school? Like what are they taking away from their experiences? Because it's a lot more than some specific bit of literacy or mathematics. The other thing that came to mind is just a recognition that if boys are struggling, often they're struggling in silence. There's still a stigma against asking for help, particularly when it also means admitting a weakness or a vulnerability, because of that expectation that to be a man, you've got to be able to do it on your own and you've got to be strong and figure it out. And so, yeah, like there's a kid I know who, long story short, just relocated to be with family in Mexico. And all of a sudden he's expected to do everything in school in Spanish. And he knows a bit of Spanish, but not that much. He's always been top of the class back here in Ontario. And so it's been really jarring for him to move to that different culture and then start really failing in school. And so he's kind of been like head down, losing sleep, like falling behind. And we had a conversation where we were talking about, okay, what's hard? And, you know, this is what I've observed about, you know, how, you know, you've been talking lately. And he kind of benefited from just a conversation that was like, yeah, asking for help is an option. Because he had never done it before. He'd never done it before because he's really gifted. He's a really,
he didn't
really,
have to before.
Exactly. But some people have never done it before because they didn't feel safe enough to, or they didn't, you know, they didn't have any stakes that they needed to. So there's lots of different reasons boys wouldn't have asked for help before. And so it was a conversation about, okay, what would it actually look like to say to your teacher, I kind of need a hand here. Mm-hmm. And then he got a bit of help, but it wasn't exactly the help that he needed. So that was all really new terrain for him. And so, yeah. So what came to mind for me is like a boy, like I'm thinking about that kid who's struggling with radicals. Like there's a good chance he was up in his room the nights before that test, trying to figure it out, wrapping his mind, like, and just really struggling and banging his head against the desk. And I have no clue. His parents are really great parents. So maybe there's nothing else to it, but maybe they were just thinking he's fine, you know, and that's normal, but maybe they could have gone and checked on him and said, well, you've had that one page in front of you for a long time. Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, starting at a young age with our kids, of it's okay to ask for help. And I think helping them verbalize that, like you did, Jonathan, of what would you say to the teacher? I think our boys need that support to get specific. Otherwise, they're going to just, oh, I can do it myself. So we had a conversation with Brendan, who also lives in Canada, and his research around youth. And the top thing that he discovered in his research was that boys do not share because they do not want to be a burden to their parents, to their whoever, to their community. And so, you know, recognizing that and opening the door for them to be able to come to you and say, I need help.
Find out what the NBA finals have to do with boys asking for help after these brief messages from our sponsors. As Mother's Day is coming around, I find I'm missing my mom more and more. And there's always questions and stories I wish I had asked her when she was still here. I do remember that I gave her a book once upon a time with questions for her to write the answers to. And bless her heart, she didn't answer very many. So that was really a disappointment. But fast forward to now and technology. And now we have mylifeinabook.com. It takes all those questions and stories and it puts it in a format that is sent to your person, whoever you designate, on a regular basis so that the prompts come, they're easily answered either written or voice to text, and they're captured by mylifeinabook.com. These family stories, this legacy that you want to leave for your children and your grandchildren. MyLifeInABook.com, create an unforgettable gift for your mom, your dad, your children this Mother's Day. Use our coupon code ONBOYS for 10% off. Go to MyLifeInABook.com and use ONBOYS for 10% off. Create that legacy. Carry on those stories.
We all know that vitamins can help fill nutritional gaps in our diet. But a lot of us don't like to take vitamins because we don't like swallowing pills. How do you feel about that, Janet?
There's some days that I look at my vitamins and go, yeah, I should take those. I'll do it later. But I'll tell you what's changed. I have gotten easy melt vitamins. I have the D3 and I have the B12s and a multivitamin. And I just pop them in my mouth and they dissolve. And I don't have to think about swallowing a vitamin.
And you don't necessarily need water either to have on hand to get this big vitamin now.
Yeah, no. And they taste good. And they're sugar-free. They melt quickly. The reason they melt is because of plants, not chemicals.
Ah, plant-based nutrition. For a limited time only, you can receive a free 3-month supply of Easy Melt Vitamin D3 with your first purchase. To claim your free D3, visit try.easymelt.com/onboys. That's try.easymelts.com/onboys.
Yeah, one of the ways we used to talk about that in Next Gen Men's programming was in the years following the 2018 NBA Finals. So to jog your memory, really,
oh, please do.
Yeah, really, really simply. It was against the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. LeBron James and J.R. Smith were on the Cavaliers, and J.R. Smith messed up a play and cost them the game. And LeBron James was so upset, he punched a blackboard and then played the next 3 games with a really serious hand injury, and they lost the entire finals. So Us, we are probably like, oh, vaguely remember that, or, you know, hadn't heard about that. But every single adolescent boy in the greater Toronto area was super familiar with exactly what had happened and why. And so the question that we would ask boys, which was this really familiar terrain of talking about elite athletes, was, if you're LeBron James, why don't you tell anybody? Why don't you ask for help? And the one of the answers in terms of that being a burden was, I don't want to let my teammates down. I don't want to let my fans down or anything like that. And there were lots of other reasons, like not wanting to be targeted or not wanting, you know, to be judged and things like that. But that idea of not wanting to let the people around me down or be a burden on them was like super present. And then we would transition from talking about sports to talking about mental health, which then is sort of how you go from where boys are, which is a comfortable conversation, into that more, you know, vulnerable landscape.
I'm really curious about those conversations. I'm not a huge sports fan. I know Janet is even less than I am, so I'm not super familiar with that. But just based on your description, I mean, it sounds like there's all kinds of juicy conversations you could have with boys around that. Because, I mean, there's also somebody was feeling strong emotions and released them physically in a way that caused harm, that then caused harm on a wider scale. Like, were those conversations that you had as well?
Yeah, totally. It's always a bit of a gift when there's something resonant in their lives that can be unpacked deeply. So like another example would be Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson, which, like, again, every young teenage boy is pretty familiar with, talked pretty openly about struggling with depression. And similarly, there's been other, you know, basketball players who've done similar things. And so it is valuable to look for, to be aware of those things, to look for them and unpack them when they come up, whether it's the NBA or like Andrew Tate would be another example. I'd say another really thing that is like that, I mean, so my background is like experiential education, outdoor education. And so like, I think even more so than talking about like famous people that they're aware of is having like some sort of experiential activity doing some sort of activity and then debriefing. And that's always a really powerful way to get those topics opened up.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned Andrew Tate. Let's talk about Andrew Tate.
I want to come at this for a minute from the parent perspective. And Jonathan, I know that that's not your perspective, but here's what I'm saying. Some parents are aware enough that they've heard the name Andrew Tate and they've heard and seen misogynist. He says terrible things. Teen boys love him. So there are some parents and educators who just want to like go in on that. Oh my God, Andrew Tate, you can't blah, blah, blah. Partly because we parents, adults, especially adult women, like, I don't want to sit through a bunch of Andrew Tate videos and have to listen to his stuff. And yet I feel like talking to somebody about something without really knowing what it is has the potential of creating some disconnect and misunderstanding.
Yeah, totally. I was just with a dad and his 14-year-old, and his 14-year-old made a comment about the Matrix, which, for those of you who don't know, is part of the iconography of Andrew Tate. He's like leveraging that metaphor. And I think the 14-year-old said something about the Matrix and then something about Top G. And then we were all pretty familiar with what he was talking about. And kind of like you just described, dad kind of went on the offensive and was like, you shouldn't say it. Like, you know, Andrew Tate is like a terrible person, and went on and on. The 14-year-old pushed back and was like, dad, that's not what it's about. Like he's like teaching the young generation to like rethink everything, and he's getting, and it's like, and people are, and the Romanian government's making up lies to like silence him. And there was this sort of pushback on, first of all, parent, you don't understand. And second of all, you know, there's two sides to the story. There's complexity, and I don't want to be painted with your broad brush of sexism. Yeah. And then I like chimed in, and because I was like, I wanted to support the dad a little bit, and but I also didn't want to shut down his son. And I said something like, yeah, I mean, you can rethink the economy without being misogynistic and violent towards women. Just putting that out there as a possibility. And the kid was like, yeah, yeah. He's like, and then he was like, yeah, and Andrew Tate is really, really awful towards women. And it was interesting to me, I hadn't really thought about it too much, but when I think back on that, his admission came in response to my own. You know, he was willing to say, Andrew Tate's not perfect, when I was willing to say, I'm not shutting you down. And yes. If that makes sense. So that, yes. That kind of, yeah, that's what, I don't know. That just sort of came to me as I retold that story.
It's a complex situation. And I don't mean complex, like, you know, violence towards women that's not complex. That's just wrong, period. Mm-hmm. But Andrew Tate does say other things. And so when you try and paint everything black and white or only focus on one part, you do kind of give kids the space to go, well, you just don't understand me. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're willing to listen and engage in the conversation, you can begin to acknowledge complexity and maybe discuss it, which, you know, you took an avenue and said, you know, there are other ways to rethink the economy.
Yeah, something I'm working on, it which comes from my own therapist, is approaching conversations with curiosity, mm-hmm. like not approaching with your mind made up or feeling like, you know, I have this lesson or this knowledge that needs to be imparted on this young person, but just to be open with curiosity. If it was easy to do, I wouldn't have had to talk about it with a therapist. So right, yeah. It's one of those things that's like, oh yeah, duh. But then when you're in the moment, you're like, no. Like you know, 14-year-old, you need to hear what I have to say about mm-hmm. Andrew Tate. It's like, I understand that feeling of wanting to teach and wanting to explain. But I think the curiosity is going to lay the foundation for that possibility for an impactful conversation.
Let's mm-hmm. take that and move into discussions of talking and teaching about consent with mm-hmm. young boys. You alluded to this before, right? On the one hand, you have us adults who, we never learned this. Many of us made and experienced mistakes on this front. Mm-hmm. Now we are supposed to, air quote, teach the boys. And I think a lot of times adults go into this conversation from a top-down, we're going to tell you what to do approach, versus leading with curiosity. Is mm-hmm. that some of what you see? Like, tell us what you think some of the issues are in terms of the conversations that we're having, what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and what we are just way off base on.
Yeah, so I've been in various ways teaching about consent for a few years now, and I've definitely been really deeply thinking about it over the last year. And so I do have definitely thoughts, and definitely some of those thoughts are super motivated by curiosity. I, as a facilitator of a workshop of grade 7 and grade 8 boys, obviously have more experience, I have more research, and I have some things that they need to understand that I'm going to teach them. And that's part of how I operated, and obviously continue to operate sometimes. And I had an experience with an eighth grader. We had gone through the definition of consent and maybe some scenarios and an acronym and that kind of thing, just focusing on the do's and don'ts of consent. And this eighth grader said to me, Jonathan, I get it. Like, I understand what it is and I understand that it matters, but I'm going to be honest with you. That's not happening. There's no way I actually say that kind of thing when I'm in a situation like that. And so the first possible response is like huge red flag, you know, don't like do this, don't do that. Like you're like to shut that down, you know, because while it's valuable that he was being honest with me, like what he was sharing didn't totally resonate with where I was hoping that these young adolescent boys would go. But instead of just, you know, shooting back, I embraced curiosity and said, okay, tell me more. And that's where we came down to, and this is something I've heard again and again, which is the main reason boys can't figure out exactly how to fit with that piece of consent. Do you have a prediction? If that kid told me it's too blank, do you have a prediction of what he was probably going to say?
Or cringe popped into my head.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or scripted. It's too scripted. You know, say exactly this. Well, it doesn't fit the situation.
Yeah, both of those. So the too scripted is like super present, and that's a simple one. It's just sort of an acknowledgement that, yeah, I as an adult have a different vocabulary. I as an educator, you know, am using
a seventh grade boy.
Exactly. Yeah. So that one totally is present, and it's a little bit easy to just be like, yeah, you got to practice. That's why you have to practice, right? And figure mm-hmm. out what does it sound like coming from you? The cringe one is the one that I want to talk about now, because that I have heard over and over again. Boys just being like, it's too awkward. It's so embarrassing. It's going to kill the vibe. Again, like if we're not being curious, like the easy response is get over it. It matters. But if we really dwell on that awkwardness, and this is something I've kind of been doing and unpacking over the last year, is okay, what does that awkwardness mean? What does that teach us or tell us about how to do consent education more effectively with yeah. boys? There's sort of, I came up with sort of two pieces to it. And the first one is if either one of you was sort of catching up with your friends, you know, like Friday evening dinner party, and you were trying to tell a story and you got sort of jumbled around with your words and the story kind of fell flat and didn't make a lot of sense. How big of a deal would that be for you? Would that be like really significant or like, eh, it happens?
I would say, that happens. I'm also not in seventh grade anymore. So I think seventh grade me would have thought it was a bigger deal.
Right.
I would have, yeah. It's the context that you're in, the people that you're with, the situation.
Yeah. So the comparison that I sometimes make is, okay, if you're talking with your friends, it happens. If you're talking in front of like 300 people, then all of a sudden, yeah, that awkwardness is really, really significant. And that's because of stakes. Because when you are in an environment where the stakes are really high, awkwardness is kind of like avoid at all costs, right?
Yes.
As soon as you say it, you're like, well, yeah, of course there's stakes for boys in relationships because they're immersed in a culture that tells them to be a man, you've got to be able to get girls. You have to be dominant and aggressive and not take no for an answer. You have to be hypersexual and performing beyond your peers. That comes again and again as they grow into adolescence. And so—
And there's the simple human stakes too of like, this is the person that I am most attracted to right now, that I really like this person. I so want this person to want me because in that moment, that person's perception of me matters more than your perception of me, Janet, or yours, Jonathan, or anybody else's. So the stakes are kind of automatically high in a lot of these situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a double, it's almost a triple whammy because you have the expectations from our culture on what it means to be a man. You have a really deep desire for the validation of that person that you're with. And then sometimes as an adolescent boy, you might even also have the expectations of your peers because you've maybe been talking about hooking up or you've been talking about whatever it might've been, like in the locker room or at the party or whatever it might be. So it's like this triple, like, one, two, three of, and then all of a sudden the stakes are through the roof. And so it's not that surprising to be like, am I going to say something I'm not totally comfortable with and I'm not totally sure how to say, and it might ruin the vibe and things could totally fall apart? Or am I just going to kind of cross my fingers and hope this lands?
And when you mentioned the vibe, the other thing that occurred to me was they're not wrong in that up until this point in their life, nearly everything they've seen that has portrayed romantic love or a sexual relationship does not include these conversations, right? This is not how our movies go. This is not how our songs go. So it does seem really out of place. It seems like that's not part of the vibe.
Yeah, totally. In movies, they go from like 0 to 100 so fast. And I think that'll continue to change. Like there's examples of recent movies where there's a little bit more. It's something that'll change, but yeah, the dominant like narratives and representations, it's just completely absent. I was talking with a 12-year-old about going on a date and he was like, you know, you've got to kiss her first. And like, he had all these sort of expectations, this is what you've got to do. And I was like, what? First of all, you're 12. Like you've never been on a date. Where are you getting? Cause he was so knowledgeable. He was like, this is absolutely the way it is. And he was like, movies, dude. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. So given this, then how do we continue those conversations with our boys in a way that respects, you know, their perception, these high stakes?
Quick pause here for a message from our sponsors, and then Jonathan's going to be sharing with us what we say next. This episode is sponsored by ByHeart.
Babies need to eat. And whether you breastfeed or bottle feed, use formula, combine all of the above, you need options. We wanted to let you know about ByHeart baby formula. ByHeart has a patented protein blend that gets the closest to breast milk. It includes two of the most abundant proteins in breast milk. And ByHeart actually ran a clinical trial comparing their formula to a leading infant formula and proved that babies on ByHeart have softer poops, less spit up, and easier digestion. ByHeart is also the only US-made infant formula to use organic, grass-fed whole milk. So if you need baby formula for your baby, consider ByHeart. New customers can get 10% off your first order by using code ONBOYS at ByHeart.com. That's BYHEART.com/podcast. And it is 10% off your first order. ByHeart.com/podcast. This is a limited time offer and additional terms and conditions may apply. We all know that vitamins can help fill nutritional gaps in our diet. But a lot of us don't like to take vitamins because we don't like swallowing pills. How do you feel about that, Janet?
There's some days that I look at my vitamins and go, yeah, I should take those. I'll do it later. But I'll tell you what's changed. I have gotten Easy Melt vitamins. I have the D3 and I have the B12s and a multivitamin. And I just pop them in my mouth and they dissolve and I don't have to think about swallowing a vitamin.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily need water either to have on hand to get this big vitamin now.
Yeah, no, and they taste good and they're sugar-free. They melt quickly. The reason they melt is because of plants, not chemicals.
Ah, plant-based nutrition. For a limited time only, you can receive a free 3-month supply of Easy Melt Vitamin D3 with your first purchase. To claim your free D3, visit try.easymelt.com/onboys. That's try.easymelts.com/onboys. Now what?
Yeah. Right now, my best answer to that is watching for opportunities to build up his own sense of confidence in himself as a man so that he's not dependent on the validation of his peers. Mm-hmm. And he can handle learning, you know, this person doesn't feel the same way about me as I do about them. Yeah, just finding ways for them to feel like they are worthy. They are, you know, I don't know how you teach this as a parent, but they're attractive, you know, they're smart and they're funny. And I think just sort of approaching consent conversations, less about rejection, like it's, you know, you'll either get it or you won't, and more just about information. You'll understand where they're at. And that's not really about you. It's about them. Ah. And that kind of, that takes the stakes a little bit down as well.
I like that framing, right? It's information that helps you understand where that other person is at. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with you as mm-hmm. a person, not your physical attractiveness, not your sense of humor. It's just where they're at right now in this moment.
So that's from a book called Creating Consent Culture by Erica Scott and Marcia Bashinsky. I'm not sure how to say her last name, but a really great book. And they kind of say it makes it less of a referendum on who you are as a person and more just information about what's going on between you. And the thing that just occurred to me is another thing parents could do is brainstorm. You know, if a kid experiences rejection, which all kids do at some point or another, brainstorm, what are all the different possibilities? So for example, I just got rejected by a girl that I'm really interested in, and it was hard. You know, I had to navigate the feeling of, okay, I'm not wanted in the way that I wish I was. And if I haven't talked about this yet with anybody, but if a parent, you know, maybe not my parent at this stage in my life, but yeah, maybe a parent or a friend that was
maybe
like,
maybe just
brainstorm.
Two random people on a podcast, you know, for instance.
Yeah, right. To brainstorm, what are all the possible reasons? Maybe she's moving. Maybe she's busy with work. Maybe she's like just getting out of a relationship. Maybe she's met somebody recently that she, like, there's so many other reasons that's where we're at, that it's helpful to have to brainstorm. Yeah. So that's another idea.
Yeah, it is. And I think in having those conversations too, we also are conveying to our boys that from the flip side, it's okay for them to say no or to not do certain things for those reasons. Like, I may not want to, I know that you're a beautiful girl and all the culture says I'm supposed to want to like go out on a date with you, but I was really looking forward to dirt biking on Saturday. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it doesn't mean I don't want you, but I can prioritize myself and my needs also.
Mm-hmm. I still remember being in grade 8 and bicycling with my friend who we had been at a dance, like, I can't remember, the night before or a few nights before. And basically the prettiest girl in school had asked him to dance and he'd said no. And I remember asking him, why did you say no? And he didn't have much of an answer. He was basically just like, I didn't want to. And, you know, you forget a lot of things as you grow older. And so it stands out to me that I still remember that conversation and how confused I felt, that it just did not make sense, that if the prettiest girl asks you, the answer should be yes. And yeah, that conversation just popped into my mind. Mm-hmm. But that brings me to the second piece of awkwardness.
Okay.
Which is, if we go back to it, the scenario of you're at a dinner party, let's say someone brings a contribution. It's like a potluck, you know, or everyone, they bring a drink or whatever it might be. And it's like not your favorite. Would your like sense of awkwardness, or let's just say etiquette, prevent you from saying something?
Oh, I've been in this situation because I tend to be a picky eater. I'm 50 years old and I feel uncomfortable talking about this, especially if you are hosting the party, you don't say anything. I mean, you sort of feel obligated, like I have to eat at least a little bit of it because I want to be polite.
So then what about if you're at a dinner party and you know someone's anaphylactic to peanuts and someone brings like a peanut butter pie? Is your awkwardness still going to keep you silent?
No, then I will speak up.
Right. And so the difference there to me is about the possibility of harm, because there's a real significant possibility that someone could get hurt. All of a sudden, the awkwardness doesn't matter that much. Yeah, I'm going to say something because it could really impact someone's life if I don't. And so to go back to that idea of, okay, boys need to know their boundaries matter. There's a really great quote from Peggy Orenstein, who wrote the book Boys and Sex, where she says something like, if a guy is supposed to deny his own violation as he grows up, how is he supposed to feel empathy for someone else's? Like, if a guy isn't able to say no, how can he hear somebody else saying no? Mm-hmm. And yeah, like if we think back on boys' experiences of getting told to walk it off when they scrape their knee, or getting told, you know, boys don't cry when they're struggling with a, you know, a relational breakdown. Or like, I don't know if your sons ever did this, but like getting slapped in like the private parts, just by their friends joking around, like that same friend actually, who told me, yeah, I didn't feel like dancing with that girl. Another thing that he would do sometimes, this is again, middle school, would just punch me out of nowhere. And I'd be like, what the hell? And he would be like, it was a reflex. And we both knew it wasn't a reflex, but it was just messing around as guys. And at some point, I really did not want to be punched.
But you sort of learn the cultural message is take it, because this is what guys do. And if I don't, then I'm not. Yeah, that's messed up. Mm-hmm. But this is the world that we're living in.
Yeah. So there's this. So there's, again, I'm always quoting people. I really, another guy who wrote, like, no wonder men have failed to see grabby men as a problem for women, because that's how they grow up. Not necessarily from men, but from their peers, to constantly invading their personal space. And also as they grow up into teenagehood, it becomes like increasingly often sexualized violence that they experience in the locker room. Like I had a guy when I was in grade 9 in the locker room, kind of jokingly, but also relatively violently, tell me to suck his dick. And that was just part, like, I didn't tell anybody about that. I didn't even feel particularly heartbroken about that. I was angry, you know, that he had kind of made me look that way and feel that way, but I didn't tell anybody about it because it was just normal. That's what it's like to be in high school, in gym class. People are going to mess around. And so, yeah, if that's the world that boys live within, we as parents need to think about, how do we validate their boundaries? How do we affirm that their feelings matter in order for them to be able to recognize the boundaries and the feelings of others?
That is such an important point that I feel like gets overlooked all the time. I am 100% for respecting the boundaries of women and girls. Staunch supporter of that. But if you start, as so many people do, from the perspective of boys and men, here are things that you must do to keep girls and women safe.
Right.
Rather from just the validating of human boundaries, we all have them. If we validate human boundaries, then we learn to respect ourselves and respect others. And I think that is such a healthier and more effective approach.
Yeah, when I was in grade 9, I also started dating a girl. I liked her. I thought she was cool. I thought she was pretty. But one of the biggest motivations for me was I was sick of getting called gay. Yeah. Because I heard that every day. And so at some point it was helpful for me to be able to say to that guy in the locker room, I'm not gay. I have a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And something that I've kind of unpacked as I've grown older, when I look back on that, was my choices with her were because they were motivated by others, by how I was being treated by others and how I wanted to be able to respond to others, to some extent were a, I guess the word that's coming to mind for me is compromise. There might be a better word for it, but it was a compromise of my own values and definitely a compromise of her worth, because she wasn't really in a relationship that she thought she was in. And okay, I did not tell that story super well, but you get the idea, right? When
It well enough that I flash back to, you know, a high school experience too. And from this perspective, I can see that, yes, my decision-making was based much more on, you know, other people's perceptions and how I wanted to appear and what I thought would help me navigate the social landscape than my values. I didn't know what my values or my boundaries even were at that point. Nobody told me to consider them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your values and your feelings in that situation. Absolutely. Jonathan, you are doing so much good work in the world. Oh my goodness. Next Gen Men is out there working with boys. You have an event coming up that I want to make sure that people know about. The Future of Masculinity.
Yeah, the Future of Masculinity Summit, that idea of what are my values? Someone has to give me an opportunity to explore that myself. That's something that we're doing with one of our facilitators at the upcoming Future of Masculinity Summit. So it started as a pandemic virtual pilot project, and it's evolved into this neat hybrid. It is still virtual, but it leverages educators within their own classroom, hosting sort of holding space with young people, and then sort of with Next Gen Men's leadership and expertise, diving into meaningful topics. So it's, yeah, you can find out about it at nextgenmen.ca/summit. And it's free to access. And it's happening at the end of April this year, happening probably whenever somebody listens to this podcast, it'll be happening at some point, because it's a really neat opportunity for schools.
Yeah. So look for nextgenmen.ca. Go to that website anyway, because you've got a great newsletter and tons of information about supporting boys in their passage into adulthood. Yeah.
I'm going to put all these links in the show notes, so it's really easy. You don't need to worry if you remembered or heard everything that Jonathan said. Just go to Google On Boys Podcast. The links are going to be there for you. We want you to take advantage of this.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to say something to finish, because I was like, the last thing I said was a story that I didn't feel like made a lot of sense. So having a concluding thought is great. I would say the thing that I normally, when I have the opportunity to say something pointed to an audience is basically, if you're not having these kinds of conversations with a boy or a young man in your life, whether it's your kid or your student or your nephew or whoever it might be, I'm going to be blunt. You're part of the problem. Parents, educators, or anybody in their communities are role models for young people in their lives, and sort of in charge of like having creating spaces where there can be really meaningful conversations. And if you're not doing that, then you need to start, because young people are looking for those conversations. And man, I've like, again, not said this in a super articulate way, but that's I think it's just our duty, you know, and our responsibility. Yeah. And so I just want to encourage, anybody listening to this to take the opportunity and to start building that relationship where they can have those kinds of conversations.
As Jonathan said, we hope that this conversation has given you some framework to have these conversations with the boys in your life. Thank you for being our listeners. Thank you for supporting our sponsors. If you found value in this podcast, please share it with a friend. Share it with your son's teacher. We need to continue these conversations. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-hosts, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net and Janet Allison of boysalive.com.
Want to get smarter about investing? Then tune in to the Capital Ideas Podcast from Capital Group, home of American Funds Distributors, Inc., one of the world's leading asset managers. Each week, we bring you stock market outlooks, macroeconomic updates, and investment strategies that can help you succeed. Learn from portfolio managers with decades of experience about how they navigate uncertain markets. Prepare to be engaged, enlightened, and entertained by listening to the Capital Ideas Podcast today.